You are listening to BensTorah.com.
The very first mitzvah that we should commence with should be the one that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the illustrious Tana, who penned the entire Shisha Sinri Mishnah, he had 613 mitzvahs that he wanted to discuss. And it's really not just 613. As Rav Avram Achi Agrol, the brother of the Vilna Gaon, writes at the very outset of a Sefer Malos HaTorah, quoting the Vilna Gaon, 613 merely represents the Shoroshim, the roots from which sprout forth, from which emanate thousands of other mitzvahs. So we have so much to talk about, and he's going to give us Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, you're giving us such a monumental work. How are you going to start? What are you going to pick? So what does he start with? We open up Maseches Brachos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph, and Gemara Brachos, Da Bezem and Aleph, Mei Masai, Kohar, Neshmar, Marvin. When do we start reading the Kriya Shema of night? Out of all the 613, why did Rebbe then decide to commence specifically with Kriya Shema? Writes Rav Tzodek HaKohen, and his Tzidkas HaTzadik and Maseches Brochus and Oz Dalid, writes the Sefer Zachos Rav Chidushe Arim on Maseches Brochus, and writes the Tosfos on Sheishem, quoting an earlier Kadmon, also making the identical point that the choice reason why Rebbe decided to start specifically with Kriya Shema is because, practically speaking, this is the first mitzvah that you have. After all, when does a boy become a bar mitzvah? On the night when he becomes Yud Gimel Shanim V'Yom Echad, when he reaches this milestone of becoming 13 years of age, it's Halach L'Mosh Mishinai. That's the Rosh Klal Tazayin in Oz Beis. It's traced back to Moshe Rabbeinu given at Sinai. Now, why does a boy become a bar mitzvah at the age of 13 and a girl at the age of 12? We have a Mesorah, it's part and parcel of the tradition. You get to 13, you get to 12. So now, the night before, Tzeis HaKochavim, nightfall has descended, and now you're a bar mitzvah. What's the first mitzvah you have? Kriya Shema of Marvin, of Arvus. The very first mitzvah that you encounter is Kriya Shema night. So that's why writes Rav Tzodek, the Tosfos on Sheishem, the Chiddush Arim, it makes a lot of sense. It's quite apropos. Why would Rebbe begin with Kriya Shema? Because from a pragmatic standpoint, that is Lamaisa, practically speaking, that's the first mitzvah that you have. But then still we have to ask, why is that the first mitzvah? Why should that be the first mitzvah that any bar mitzvah boy now has on a d'oraisa, on a biblical level? And thus, Rebbe starting Shisha Sidrei Mishnah all commences specifically with Kriya Shema of Arvus. The idea, of course, is that the very first thing you have to do when you become a bar mitzvah is to be makabel the old mitzvahs, to accept upon yourself the yoke, the onus, the full gamut, the scope of all the 613 commandments. Shema encapsulates therein a declaration that says, I'm a Kabbal at all, O Machu Shemayim, writes the Abu Dram, Rabbi David Abu Dram, in his Perish al Tfilo, one of the Rishonim, one of the medieval commentators, that what is Shema? It's Rosh Tevis, it's an acronym, O Machu Shemayim, backwards. Parenthetically, why would it be backwards? Because you have to be Makabal, O Machu Shemayim, the yoke of the kingship of the heavens, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God, the Almighty above, even when life seems to be backwards. No coincidence, you meet up with an Israeli, and you say, no, Rabbi Yehuda, Mashlomcha, how are you doing? What does he say? Akol b'seder, everything is b'seder. Even that which is lo b'seder, I once asked an Israeli, he said, Afila Mashal lo b'seder, Zegam kem b'seder. Everything in life is b'seder. Why? Because it's all part of the Malchus Shemayim, it's part of God's infinitely devised master plan. And everything that happens in this world, it's part of God's Seder. It's part of His arrangement. So Shema is what? Backwards is, O Machu Shemaim, you accept upon yourself the yoke of heaven. Why backwards? Even when life is backwards, still you have to be Makam O Machu Shemaim. And what else does Shema, Shin, Memayin stand for? Writes the Abu Dram. Let's turn to the Navi, the prophet Yeshayahu, who writes in chapter 40 and verse 26, Su Marum Einechem, lift up your eyes to the Almighty. Look up to God. Know that everything in the world comes from God. And that is what? That is Hashem, who is Shakai, Melech Olam. He is Shakai, he is the creator of the world, who said to the world, writes the Gemara Chagiga, Shamar Liolam Dai, he is the Melech HaOlam. So Mar Menechem, uplift, elevate your eyes and see that God created everything. And that's accepting upon yourself the onus of Malchus Shemayim. That is Shema. That is why we start our lifetime, Ke'ilu, so to speak, we become a bar mitzvah in the night of 13 years and one day. The very first mitzvah is, first you got to start with the basics. What's the number one basic? Make that proud declaration. And that's the credo of the Jewish people from time immemorial. Famous story of Shlomo Volba, the author of the Sefer Ali Shor and so many other famous works. After the war, after the Holocaust, he went around like so many others trying to rescue Yiddish and Neshamas, Jewish souls. And he went to a orphanage. He went to an orphanage and he asked the Christians supervising the orphanage, are there any Jewish children here? And of course they answered right away, no way, we don't have any Jews here. There are no Jews. He says, can I just go in and say hello? I just want to go and look at the kids. And he walks into the room and Revolva screams out, Shema Yisrael. And so many kids get out of their beds and they say, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Every Jewish soul, this is one of the first things you learn. Sukkah, the bottom of 42a. When a child learns to speak, what's the first thing you teach him? Moda Ani, and you teach him Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Everybody knows this is the credo by which we live. This is the adage that we so champion day in and day out, 24/7. 365, because this is that proud declaration that says, Hashem HaMakamel, Omochu Shamayim, I accept the yoke. But it's more than that. Writes the Chassam Sofer, Moshe Sofer, and his Chassam Sofer al Torah's commentary on Chumash, Parshas Vayera, and the newer editions, it's page 246, and the Chassam Sofer was writing over a drosha that he said, a speech that he gave over in the midst of a bar mitzvah of one of his sons. As Amsofa writes, at the very first mitzvah that any bachur ha-bar mitzvah, that any new bar mitzvah boy really has, is the mitzvah of simcha. He even calls it, he labels it, a mitzvah saseh midaraisa, the tokacha, when God issues the rebuke, the reprimand, in the pages of Parshas Kisavo. What do we find? Tachas asher lavata shomakecha b'simcha v'tiv leivav. God says, you know why I'm punishing you? Because you didn't serve me b'simcha. You didn't go out of your way b'simcha. Writes the Sam Sefer, when you become a bar mitzvah, what is the very first mitzvah that you have? Simcha. You got to be happy. What does it mean, be happy? Writes Rav Pinchas Freeman in his incredible Sefer, Bini Atta, on an Yoni Bar Mitzvah. He says, so what's going on? Is this a machlokas? Is this a dispute? The Chassam Sofer opines that the first mitzvah, simcha, you got to be happy. But what about the Chedushei Harim? What about the Tosas Anshei Shem? Rav Tzadik and so many others, Rebbe, Rav Yudanossi, started Mishnayis with Shema, because that's Omochu Shemayim. The answer is, of course, it's Omochu Shemayim. But how are you makabel Omochu Shemayim? Do you say, shucks, this is such a bummer, I have all these mitzvahs, what a burden, what an onus? Or do I say, great, I'm going to go into this new phase of my life, I'm a bar mitzvah, I'm a bar onsh, and I'm subject to God's punishments, I now have to accept upon me the mitzvahs, I'm now a bochur bar mitzvah, omochu shamayim, shema, roshi, tevis, and acronym, omochu shamayim, I'm going to take life, and I'm going to take it besimcha, I want this all, I treasure this onus. I was once, a couple of months ago, had the schus, had the privilege of driving a son-in-law, Rav Chaim Kanevsky, somewhere in Eretz Yisrael. And when I was driving him, I said, Rav Kedeletsky, I know that it was a Sipur Mefursam, a very well-known story, after the Patira, upon the demise of Rav Chaim Kanevsky's wife, Rebetzin Kanevsky, it was said over at the Shiva that the children asked their father, their Tati, Rav Chaim, they said, Tati, Rebbe, what was the greatest mila, the greatest trait of Ima, of Mami? What was her number one attribute? And Rav Chaim famously declared, Savlonus. She had patience for everybody. That was her number one attribute, Savlonus. She was able to tolerate, to be patient for people of all stripes, all diverse backgrounds. She warmly embraced them all. So I asked the son-in-law, I said, Sanu, I'm asking you, Rav Kedeletsky, what is the greatest mila of your shver, of your father-in-law, Rav Chaim? He said, the number one mila is, he's makabel omochu shamayim and ol ha-Torah, and he loves it. He loves that burden he carries with him, this onus, that he feels the ol ha-Torah, the yoke of Torah and the yoke of malchu shamayim is on his shoulders. He has to help keep the world going, and he loves that opportunity, and he treasures it. He's makabel the omochu shamayim together with the ol Torah, besimcha v'tuv levav, with incredible happiness, exhilaration. That is Rav Chaim Kanevsky. Do we go into a shema? Do we love it? Do we live it? Do we say, Hashem, my first mitzvah is simcha, my first mitzvah is kriya shema? Answer is, it's a zelbazach, it's one-on-one the same thing. The first mitzvah is simcha, and the first mitzvah is kriya shema. But writes of Pinchas Freeman, you have to accept that omachu shemayim b'simcha b'tzavleibav. You got to smile. You got to enjoy it. That's got to be with a geshmak. That's what omachu shemayim b'simcha is all about. Asks the Avodrom, Shimon Schwab, in his wonderful work on Tefillah, poses the same question. We have so many birchas hamitzvahs, a blessing, before we perform any maisa mitzvah, any act that's a positive commandment, we recite a blessing. How come there's no blessing on this mitzvah deraisa, the very first mitzvah deraisa, the very first biblical commandment? Why is there no bracha? Baruch atah Hashem asher kedesham likro kriyashma. Why is there no bracha? Writes the Avodah Zarah, because a bracha is what? That I'm accepting upon myself, malchus shamayim, I can't partake of this world unless I recite a bracha. Bracha is 35b. Also, lenas me'elam azol bracha. I can't derive any pleasure, any benefit until I do a bracha. Birchas hamitzvah, separate Makoras, various sources, but in the end of the day, I can't go into a mitzvah until I recognize that I'm a kabbal mechashan. Who commanded me in this mitzvah? So the whole essence of any bracha before the performance of any specific act of a mitzvah, the very first thing is, what? I'm a kabbal mechashan. But that is kriya shema. Kriya shema is its own bracha, because the very essence, the gist, what lies at the crux of kriya shema, it's all about I'm a kabbal mechashan. Hashem, I accept it wholeheartedly and lovingly. I take upon myself the yoke of the mitzvahs. Pretty special thing. So who gave it to us? Who gave us this gift of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad? The Medrash Rabban Vayechi points it out. The Sfasemes flushes out this very point. Yaakov Avinu gave us the gift of Kriya Shema. Makes a lot of sense. Because Yaakov Avinu, we know, was Mesaken Tfilas Arvis. The Gemara tells us, Babylonian Talmud of Brochus 26b, Tfilos of his Tikkunim, the forefathers, the patriarchs, they established the various Tfilos, the prayers of the day. Avram Tikkain, Shachris Yitzchak Tikkain Mincha, and Yaakov Tikkain Arvis. He gave us Myrif. Yaakov is all about night. Yaakov is the one who goes into Golas, the long, harsh, and bitter exile. Into the metaphorically defined Golas, he goes into the darkness of the night. That's what Yaakov's life is all about. Yaakov gave us the gift of Kriya Shema. And Yaakov's tefillah of Myrav, it's all about the nights, if you think about it, when the Arizal writes in his Siddur that there are four times a day when we recite Kriya Shema, all recited in their ideal times, they're all a night. Because if you recite Shachris in its optimal time, that's Tfilas Vasikin, the whole idea in Brochus 9b, so you're getting up Tfilas Vasikin before you get to Netzachama, to sunrise. First you have Kriya Shema, which precedes it. It's said when it's still dark outside. And then you have Kriya Shema Arvis. It's already the beginning of night. And then you have even the Kriya Shema that you recite in the Kabbonis before Baruch Shamar. It's still dark outside. So it's all a night. Kriya Shema night, Arvis, Tfilas Mayriv is also a night. The Kriya Shema Lamito, the whole Sigin Brochus, Daf Dalid, it's all the same thing. Kriya Shema Lamito, when you're going to sleep at night, it's all a night because that corresponds to Yaakov. That's the darkness of Golas. And what does that be? Makam Ochashmayim, even when life seems backwards, even when things are dark and cloudy and they're not lucid, and I don't see God, and I see only Hester, I see God hiding himself, so to speak, I have to know I'm still Makam Ochashmayim. Hashem says, accept it. Accept, embrace it wholeheartedly and lovingly. The Shema that you want to do it, you want to live it, you want to love it. So what does this mean that Yaakov gave us the gift of Kriya Shema? So perhaps tonight, let's briefly explore what we're doing when we say Shema Yisrael. Sure, we're quite familiar. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is thy God, the Lord is one. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, followed immediately thereafter. Baruch Shem Kibbon Malchusu Le'olam Void, as the Maral writes. Now you're giving kovet to that Malchus, you're enhancing and augmenting the status of that Malchus Avore, Kevon Malchus, so I now want to stamp additional honor onto the sense of kingship of the Almighty. But it's still deeper than that. Hashem gave us the Ten Commandments. Not everybody keeps the Ten Commandments. David Letterman once had on his late night with David Letterman, the Letterman show, one time he even had top 10 summer activities. And one of the top 10 summer activities was looking outside your window as you watch all the 10 commandments get broken in the world today, one by one. They're not always easy to keep. But how do we begin the 10 commandments? Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzitzicha Mitzrayim, I am Hashem, your Lord, I'm God, who took you out of the land of Egypt, followed There are no foreign gods. Don't worship any foreign gods. There's nobody else but me. Achduso Yisbaruch, there only is one Almighty. When Hashem said, Anochi v'lo yilucha, the Vilna Gaon explains the Gra writing in his commentary on Shir HaShirim on King Solomon's The Song of Songs in chapter 1 and verse 2. Writes the Vilna Gaon, Yishakeni and Meshikas Pio, that when King Solomon describes the kisses that God bestowed upon the Jewish people, that was a reference, explains the Gaon from Vilna, to the kisses of Anochi and Lo Yilucha, because those are the only times in history when God, when the Almighty, spoke to us directly. The sugya, the topic at the end of Maseches Makkos, bottom of 23b, Anochi v'lo yilucha m'pi ha'gevura shamanom. We heard them directly from God, writes the Vilna Gaon. God gave us a kiss. He opened up his mouth, so to speak. He spoke to us, and he gave us a kiss. He kissed us and instilled Torah inside of us. He plucked the evil inclination from our midst, and he gave us two neshikas. Why two kisses? Writes the Vilna Gaon, the same way that a chos and a kala, after they get married, the groom kisses his bride twice. Why twice? The first one is, Ani ohev otach, I love you. I want to connect to you. And the second one is exclusivity. Everybody else, you can't play the field anymore. Once you get married, that's it. Bachelorhood is gone, is over and done with. Exclusivity. The first one is, the groom kisses the bride and says, you belong to me, I love you. And the second kiss says, lo yilucha, there are no other people, no other guys. You can't play the field any longer. Henceforth, it's just me and you, kid. Exclusivity. Everybody else is cast aside. Everyone else is out of the picture. Anochi says, Jewish people, I love you. You're my figurative kala. You are my bride. And I am taking you and I'm kissing you. I'm giving you my Torah. I'm connecting to you. I'm getting married to you. And at the same time, yilucha, but there can't be any other gods. That's it. I'm the only one. Yehudo. That's it. Achdusi is birth. There's one and only one God. He is the Almighty. Take me. That's the exclusive relationship. Groom and bride, Jewish people, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Almighty. So God gave us two kisses. When do we kiss Him back? When do we kiss Hashem Yisbaruch back? I think the idea is obvious. Every time you get up in the morning, every time you go to sleep at night, what do? You give Hashem a kiss. The first mitzvah, you become a bar mitzvah, you're now entering into the status of an Evan Hashem, accepting the oak, the onus, the omach u'shamayim. First thing you do is, Kriya Shema, God, I want to give you a kiss. You go to sleep at night, Kriya Shema Lamita, give God another kiss. Before a person dies. If you want to be zoch, if you want to merit misas neshika, which the Gemara tells us in Brochus, the bottom of 8a, is the greatest of all the 903 types, categories of death. The easiest, the simplest is misas neshika, the figurative kiss that God plants upon your lips, sucking out ke'ilu the neshama, neshima, the breath of life that He initially instilled within you. And now He's taking it out. Do you want a neshika? Give God a neshika. What is the minig Yisrael? What do you recite right before you die at the end of 120? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Shema. We have stories. Two Israelis going camping, and there's a snake, a python, that wraps itself around an Israeli, and he's about to die. Shema Yisrael. He says the Shema Yisrael with such intensity, with such kavana, such concentration. Miraculously, the snake loosens its grip and slithers away. His life is saved. Has a power, a potency. Shema Yisrael, but it's more than that. It's an act of metaphorically kissing the Almighty. You want Mises Neshika, you want God to kiss you before you die? How about giving Him a kiss first and say Shema Yisrael? But how do we know that Shema Yisrael is a kiss? Well, the Vilna Gaon told us that the two kisses that God gave us, Anochi and Lo Yilucha. Well, when do we give back those kisses? Any groom who kisses his bride, he's connected to his bride, he wants the bride, by definition, to reciprocate accordingly, so the bride has to kiss him back. When do we kiss the Almighty back? Shema. Because the Gemara tells us in Brochus, the end of the first parak, 12b, the Baal HaTosus writes, quoting in Rishalmi in Brochus chapter 1 in Halacha 5, that all the Ten Commandments are subtly alluded to in the context of Shema. And where are the first two, Anochi Le'ilcha, where are they subtly alluded to? The Rishonim explained the Avodram and the Chidah and the Gros, so many commentaries, the Tosus, Rabbeinu Yehuda, Misur Leon, they all point out that Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu. Lo Yilucha, don't have any other gods. Hashem Echad, Hashem is the only one. And thus, every time we get up in the morning, what do? We kiss Hashem. Every time we go to sleep at night, we kiss Hashem. I remember once hearing Chassidus Rebbe once got up And he said that everyone has to treat his wife like a pair of tefillin. You have to treat your wife like tefillin. What do? You buy, spend a lot of money on your wife. You have to be machab the yosef, you have to spend money on her. And what do? You dress it, you get a very expensive pair of tefillin, you make sure it's the best around, and you want to connect to it. And what? And you get a nice velvet cover. You get her a nice dress, a nice velvet dress, a nice silk dress. You get it nicely decorated. And number one, you never go anywhere without your tefillin. Never go anywhere without your wife. You always, when you're traveling, you don't put the tefillin in the suitcase underneath. You don't send. You go and you sit right next to your tefillin. It's right next to you. On the contrary, it's up on top of you. The wife, you have to go up a level to marry the wife. A wife is like a pair of tefillin. When you put in the tefillin, you give the tefillin a kiss. You put the tefillin away, you give another kiss. If you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you get up in the morning, you say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem, I'm giving you a kiss. You go to sleep at night, Hashem, I want to give you another kiss. What's the kiss? I want to give the kisses you gave to me. I want to reciprocate. You gave me a kiss. Anochi Hashem Lekecha Lo'ilcha. The only times in history that God actively spoke to every member of the Jewish people. Every time we say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, I'm giving you back that kiss. I'm blowing it back to you. Hashem Elokecha, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu. Lo'ilcha, don't have any other foreign gods. Hashem Echad, yes, God, there only is one God. And I'm majorly making that declaration, and I'm proud to give you that kiss back. That's the kiss, Shema Yisrael. And I'll prove it to you that this is the Neshika. Who possessed the power of the kiss in the pages of the Chumash? And the very first kiss, we're now talking about the false kisses now of a loved one of an Esav. The Gro, the Maral, Rav Tzadok, let's go back to the first place in Chumash. We see a concept, and that teaches us what it's all about. So when's the first real kiss in the pages of Chumash? We go to Parshas Vayetze, it's coming up shortly. Vayishak Yaakov the Rochavayah, Yaakov Avinu gives a kiss to Rachel, but that's not even the first one. Because when he got the brachas and parshas toldos, Yitzchak said, Keshada b'nei Yishka, I want you to come approach, come close, and I want you to give me a kiss. And the Radak and other Rishonim, other commentators point out it was Yaakov who gave Yitzchak the kiss. So Yaakov gives him a kiss. Yaakov kisses his father. Then he meets up with his primary wife, Rachel, the Iker, the Akar Sabayas, and he gives her a kiss too. How do you understand? What does that mean that Yaakov kissed her? And for the people around, how old was she? It's a big discussion. One Hasidic Rebbe even said, why did he cry? He cried for all the commentaries that had come in later generations and misinterpreted what the kiss was all about. That's why he was crying, but he gave her a kiss. Yaakov had the power of a neshika, the power of a kiss. He kisses his father Yitzchak, he kisses his wife Rachel, and he's going to kiss the grandchildren of him together, that union of Yaakov and Rachel. When we fast forward to Parshas Vayechi, he gives a kiss to Menashe and Ephraim, the sons of Yosef. See, he's got the power of the kiss in the pages of Chumash. The first kiss, Yaakov gives it to Yitzchak. Second kiss, Yaakov gives that same kiss now to Rachel. And in the future, he's going to give it to Rachel's descendants, to his grandchildren, Menashe and Ephraim. Didn't we skip somebody? What about the father of Menashe and Ephraim? What about the son of Rachel? He gave a kiss to his father. He gave a kiss to his wife. He gave a kiss to the grandchildren of his wife, Menashe and Ephraim, the sons of Yosef. Yaakov, but you skipped somebody pretty crucial. What about your son Yosef? How come you didn't give him a kiss? The answer is he was going to give him a kiss. Let's fast forward briefly. Let's go to Parshas Vayigash, chapter 46 and verse 29. And what do we read? After a 22-year hiatus, Yaakov meets up with his son Yosef. And now he hasn't seen him. It's been a reprieve, 22 years. And what happens? Yosef goes and hugs and embraces. And he gives a chibuk and an ishak, a hug and a kiss to his dear beloved father, Yaakovino. And Yaakov's about to give his son a kiss. Rather than giving him a kiss, Rashi brings the Medrash Agadah that the rabbis say homiletically, instead of giving him a kiss back, what did he do? He recited Kriya Shema. He said, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Shema Chod. That's what you can imagine. You're Yosef, and you're about to give your father the greatest hug. Dad, Tati, I haven't seen you for 22 years. And he's running. Can you imagine, like, a hug? This is, I haven't seen 22 years, and he was his favorite, his Ben Zakunim. And he gives him a hug and an embrace, and his father's busy saying Kriya Shema. Dad, that. Give me 2 minutes. Give me a hug and then say Kriya Shema. What's going on here? The Maharami Prague explains he took all that passion, all the intensity of the love, and instead of giving it to Yosef, he said, what an opportunity. I never felt so happy in my life. I never felt so in love with Hashem for giving me this miracle. Why give all that love and direct it to my son? Yeah, sure, I love him. But let me seize the moment, carpe diem, and let me channel that intense love, not to Yosef, but let me channel it instead to the Almighty, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he gives God a kiss. He takes the call of a kiss. He kissed his father, he kissed his wife, he kissed his grandchildren, and he's about to kiss his son. Instead of kissing his son, he kisses Hashem. How do you kiss Hashem? He recited, Shema Yisrael, Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because that's when we give the kisses back to God. So what does that mean? So we give kisses back to God. You want God to kiss you before you die. Kiss Him first, and then you'll be zocha, you'll merit the death of Neshika. First you recite Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That's what it's all about. And thus when Yaakov is on his deathbed, as the Talmud, the Gemara relates in Psochim 56a, what does he want to hear from his sons? All he wants to hear is, hey, did you guys turn out all right? Did you follow my lead? Did you emulate my example, my model? And what do they say? Well, he's sitting on his deathbed. Don't worry, Tati, Dad, we got it. We gleaned the message. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Shem Echad. And he says, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Shem, Kavod Malchus L'Olam Voyed. Those are the kisses. That's the koach, the power that Yaakov brought down into the world. That's what Shema Yisrael. Give God a kiss. Get up in the morning and give him a kiss. Go to sleep at night and give him a kiss. Yeah, but what if it's a bad day? What if it's the darkness? What if I didn't see any light today? What if I didn't see any good times today? What if my life was like Yaakov? It was all about Arvis, all about Sarah Gidobon and the pain from his children, suffering after suffering. That's the Chiddush. If you love somebody, you love them through the good times and the bad times, through the roller coaster, the vicissitudes of life. You love your spouse all the time. That's what true Ahava is all about. And you give yourself your sacrifice for that spouse. And of course, you expect the same thing in return. Hashem says, I picked you to be my bride. Anochi Hashem Lokecha, lo yiloch Elohim acherim. Don't worry, God, we want to kiss you back. We want to plant two neshikas back on your lips, kaviyochol, if we could say such a thing. And we do it every time we utter those precious words, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Shem Echad. That's how you begin your new life as a bochur, a bar mitzvah. And that's what you have to be makabel simcha. I'm getting married to God. And you get married to God, you get the opportunity to give Him a kiss. Every day we're getting married to God all over again. God, I love you. I want to give you a kiss. How do you give God a kiss? He's not here. He says, I'm telling you the kiss. The kiss is follow Yaakov's gift of Kriya Shema. He was going to kiss his son. Instead, he encapsulated, ensconced that entire potency of a kiss and channeled it, directed it instead to the Almighty. That's what Shema Yisrael is all about. So let's close with the following. A beautiful idea that Rav Avraham Elshor writes in his Sefer HaLekach V'Alibu, Parshas Vayigash. We know the Gemara tells us every time we say Shema Yisrael, we take our right hand and we put it over our eyes. Have a Muskel Rishon from a basic viewpoint, from a basic standpoint. It's all about block out the rest of the world, concentrate, focus. Meditatively, so to speak, I want you to shut out the world. Don't think about anything else, and it's just you and the Almighty. In this meditative state of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu. And the Gemara tells us in the beginning of the second parak of Brochas, the bottom of 13b, that Rabbi Yudah Nasi, the same one who started out all of Shas, that the first mitzvah you need to learn about is Kriya Shema of the night. That's when we start the day, Vayer Vayboker, Kriya Shema of the night. I want you to think Kriya Shema is the same one. He stopped in the middle of a lecture and he put his right hand over his eyes, and the Rosh, the Miri, and other Rishon point out that's the Makor, that's the source. Why we take our right eye and we cover over our eyes whenever we recite Shema Yisrael. But it's got to be a little deeper than that. What's really the reason? What are the underpinnings of this concept? Right? So Rav Elshor as follows. There's a fascinating Rabbeinu Bechai. He's one of the Gedolei Rishonim, one of the foremost commentators on the Torah. And he's writing in Parshas Tzav, the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, the third in the five books of Moses. And he writes in Perches Pesach of Gimel in 8:23, he cites the Chochmei HaTeva, those who know the wisdoms of nature of the world. And Rabbeinu Bechai, it's amazing, he's quoting this scientist of his day and age, and he says that we have five senses. We know Aristotle already wrote about five senses. Scientists today go up to as many as 29 senses, but they can all be traced back to five basic senses. Of course, the sense of sight, the sense of sound, sense of smell, sense of taste, and the sense of touch. So we have five different senses. The means by which we interact with the universe around us, through the medium, via the conduit, of the Chamisha Chushim of the five senses. If we have five senses, right, so Rabbeinu Bechai, we have five fingers on the hand corresponding to those five senses. And he says, I'll prove it to you that each of the five respective fingers knows intuitively, knows instinctively to serve one of the given senses. And thus, why is it that when we go out to a nice restaurant and you get some steak stuck in between your teeth, what's the first finger that goes into the teeth? The thumb. Try and get the piece of meat out with the thumb. Why do babies suck their thumb? Why didn't any baby wake up and say, you know what, forget the peer pressure. Why don't I decide to suck my pinky today? Why are they all sucking their thumbs? Because, right, so the thumb corresponds to the sense of taste to the mouth. And thus, God gave you five fingers to serve instinctively the five given senses. So you clean out your mouth with your thumb, you clean out your teeth, and you suck your thumb when you're a baby. All chush hatam, sense of taste, with the thumb. Unfortunately, we don't want to go there, but when people need to clean out their noses, what's the first finger that goes there? The second finger will stop right there. You figured it out. Third one, why is it the longest finger of the Amma, right? Because it's connected, it corresponds to the sense of touch. You have an itch on your back, which is the finger that you go to first, the longest finger, which can reach an itch wherever it is on your body. Instead of getting a back scratcher, God already gave you one finger that sticks out longer than every other one. That's there to serve so you can scratch an itch wherever, a mosquito bite, wherever it is. And the fourth one corresponds to the chush ha'ri'ah. People want to clean out their eyes, they very often go to the fourth finger. You're right, you're going to say, what do you mean, Rabbi? Sometimes they use the second and the third. It's because the fourth finger is called the kemitz. And Rashi says, Ksuvus Atapa 5b, because the Kohen would start the process of taking out and separating from the flour of the korban of the sacrifice using this finger, but he also used this one and this one. So people very often will go to the fourth finger to clean out their eyes, sometimes number two or three. And people want to clean out their ears. Where do they go? You watch it, and you'll see it on the subway, the pinkies. The pinkies go to the ears, and people are cleaning out their ears. Five fingers corresponding to the five senses. So what's the idea? I want you, when you recite Kriya Shema, the Talmud tells us in Brachos 13b, I want you to take your right hand, and I want you to cover your eyes. Why? Because our means of interacting with the mundane, materialistic world around us is through the medium of the five senses. You got them right here. I want you to take your hand on the five senses, and I want you to subjugate that before the Almighty. Say, God, I belong to you. Oh, Machu Shemayim, Shema. All of me belongs to you. So I take my yad, yadayim. After all, how do we create? How do we build? How do you trade stocks on the computer? How do you create? How do you build? How do you write with the yadayim? Esav, Asiya, Ish Hasode. Esav is yadayim yad Esav. Parshas told us, chapter 27, verse 25. Yadayim yad Esav. Take the yad, the means by which you build, create, and write in this mundane materialistic world. Take the five fingers corresponding to the five senses and give it up to your eyes. What are your eyes? Your eyes is where the Mekabalim, the Kabbalists inform us that the Neshama which dwells, the seat of the intellect, is the seat of the soul. That is where your Neshama resides, in the top of the Rosh, the Rishon Levarim, the number one of all of your limbs. We have the eyes, and that's the highest of all the senses. Eyes are highest up, then the ears, then the nose, then the mouth, then the fingers down below. The highest of the eyes. If you read Mark Salem, you ever see the hypnotist Mark Salem? He wrote a book. It wasn't a bestseller, because he didn't really reveal any of his secrets. But Mark Salem writes in the six keys to unlock and empower the mind that sometimes in Hollywood they try and give him actors and they try and deceive him. They try and fool him that he can't go ahead and really tell whether they're lying, whether they're telling. He's a walking lie detector. But sometimes a good actor can put on a facade and can fool him. He says, but they can never get me. Because even when they try and fool me, I could always look into their eyes. And by looking into someone's eyes, and my dad's an ophthalmologist, by the way, and I know he saved people's lives by finding brain tumors through looking into their eyes. And you could see things in their eyes. If you want, you don't believe me, 360 Central Avenue, Plaza Suites, best eye doctor in town. You'll tell him I gave him a free plug here today. So that is, you looking into the eyes, Mark Salem says you could see things, because that's seeing into someone's neshama, someone happy or sad. Peer, gaze into their eyes, and you'll be able to disclose what their true feelings are all about. So what do? We take our means, our yad, yadayim and esav, and you take the five fingers, the five senses, and I give it over to the eyes, I give it over to my neshama, I give it over to my wisdom, the leaders of wisdom, the Sanhedrin, Ein Ha'eda, Ezu Chochem, the Gemara in Talmud, 32a, Ezu Chochem, who's the truly wise person, Haroah Esanolad, he sees. He opens up his eyes. Let's open up your neshama, the Ein Ha'eda, and give over your means of interacting. Give it all over to the eyes. Shema, Omach Hashem, God, I am all yours, all of me, and all of my life, and all my possessions. Everything I own, my cars, my house, my National Geographics, my baseball cards, my stocks, it's all yours. All of me is all of you. And thus, it's not coincidental, adds Rav Avraham Ashur. Now, what is Shema Yisrael? You take the Hebrew numerical equivalent of all the respective letters, and it yields the tally 1,118. And what is this called? The Yad, Gematria 14. Hebrew numerical equivalent of 14. We have five names for the five fingers. The Talmud tells us, Ksuvus Atapa 5b, we have the Godel, the Etzpa, the Amma, the Kemitza, and the Zeres. Add up the Gematria, the Hebrew equivalent, and it yields exactly 1,118. God, I'm all yours. Here's my hand. Here's my Gashmias. Here's my physicality. Here are my five senses. I'm giving it all up to the Neshama because I'm all yours. When we say Shema Yisrael, that is Omach Shemayim. God, I am all yours, and I'm all yours, B'simcha. And that's how we start out life, and that's how we start and finish every single day of our lives. We start our day, we give a kiss to our wives. When we leave the house in the morning, we get up in the morning, we give a kiss. And when we go to sleep at night, we give another kiss to our wives. We kiss the tefillin in the morning, we kiss the tefillin at night. Why not kiss Hashem in the morning and kiss Hashem at night? Hashem, I love you. What does it mean, I love you? You love your wife, you're willing to sacrifice for an individual whom you love dearly. Are you willing to sacrifice for the Almighty? That's Shema Yisrael, Hashem HaKadosh, Hashem HaKadosh. Are you willing to give up? Are you willing to sacrifice? When you're willing to put yourself in God's hands and say, God, I willingly, embracingly, lovingly, I want the onus of Omachu Shemayim, then you'll always be besimcha. With this point, we're going to close. Why do we call it simcha, happiness? Writes Ramosha Wolfson in his wonderful work, Emunas Yitzchak, in the beginning of Parshas Kisavo, borrowing the Hirshian world of phonetic cognates, connoting the idea that words in Lashon HaKodesh and the Hebrew vernacular that sound alike are so often interrelated. So what word sounds like simcha? Somech, writes Ramosha Wolfson. If you're somech, if you lean, if you give over yourself and rely solely on the Almighty, then you'll always be besimcha. But if you abandon the Almighty, if you give yourself up, if you're ne'ezav, then you'll be ne'atzav. Atzvus, you'll go and sink into depression. If you say, I don't want God in my life, everybody, Kotzke Rebbe, where is God? Wherever you let him in. Sam Levinson, in his 1960s book, Everything But Money, the famous Jewish comedian, he says, next time you find yourself distanced from God, the first question you got to ask yourself is, who moved? God didn't go anywhere. He's there all the time. If you're somech on Hashem, you'll always be besimcha. If you're ne'ezav, if you make yourself abandon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, then you'll always be ne'ezav. You'll always be depressed. Life is filled with darkness. Life is filled with tragedies, with calamities. Life is filled with triggers that elicit feelings of depression, of sadness, of despair. Hashem says, I'm giving you the ticket to that salvation. Get up in the morning and say, you know what, Hashem, I can't control my fate. I cannot single-handedly control my destiny. I'm going to get up in the morning just like I start my new life. Shema Yisrael Hashem, I'm all yours. Am I going to sell, buy good stocks today? Did I play the market correctly when the government shutdown is going to end? When it's not going to end, did I go ahead and buy and sell at the right times? Did I make a good painting? Did I write a good article? Am I doing things with my world? I don't know, but I know that God is really the one steering the car. If you're Somech on Hashem, you'll always be Besimcha. But if you don't want to live with God and you're not willing to heartily be a Makabel, accept upon yourself that yoke of heaven above, then you will not be Besimcha. Yaakov was Besimcha. Yaakov gave us the gift of Shema Yisrael. Yaakov gave his love back to the Almighty. That's what life is all about. Go home tonight. If you didn't have a Marav yet, you'll say it at Marav and we'll all say it at Kriya Shema Lamita. You go to sleep at night, you turn to your wife, if you have one, and you give her a kiss. If you don't have one, you turn to God. God, give me a wife that I can give her a kiss so that I can know the Baal Shem Tov says what love is, so that I can channel the real potency of that kiss right back to you. Because the Baal Shem Tov says that Yaakov stopped crying right after he kissed Rachel, because he knew that that love will just enhance the love that he has for the Almighty. Tonight, Shema Yisrael, God, I want to give the Neshikas the kisses back to you. And I want to do it besimcha, because I know inside the heart of hearts that the more besimcha I accept upon myself the yoke, the onus of Omachu Shemayim, the more I give myself over to you, the more that I lean on you and say, God, you're in the driver's seat. You tell me where to go. I'm all yours. Then you'll be besimcha. Then you'll say Shema Yisrael, far more kavana. And then you'll always be the Evan Hashem that Hashem wants for each and every one of us to be. Through that springboard of Shema Yisrael will be besimcha by all the 613 commandments, Hatzlocha Rabbah, and let's get together for many more mitzvahs, a lot more Torah, and with B'yos Kol Tzedek, Umheira V'yameinu, and Yishalayim Rakodesh, when we'll kiss Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash like never before.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.